By noon, the health hazard was becoming a real concern. The day had turned off unusually warm, and the bodies were beginning to bloat and stink. Not one engine had made a sound that the defenders could hear, nor had they shown themselves or fired a ball or arrow. The defenders had stayed busy killing the buzzards that swooped in to dine on the dead.
I guess I got to go out there, Gray Bull.
I think it ought to be me. I'm taking money from the soldier boys to scout.
No, you're as big as a damn grizzly bear and clumsy as an armadillo. You'd stumble around out yonder, the Blackfoot would be sure to catch you, and I don't want to have to spend the rest of the day and night listening to you holler, because you beller like a damn constipated hog.
Mayhap you're right. If it catch you, you so damn ugly and miserable looking, they'd probably feel sorry for you and run you off for you frighten their horses and cause their women to go barren.
Oh, ho. I know if I don't tell you what to do after I'm gone, you're just going to sit here looking like a fat, dumb child and do nothing. So, you can make yourself useful by gathering up some ropes and getting ready to drag them bodies off a ways so we can burn them.
Them engines is over that ridge, Preacher. That's south. As foolish as you are about directions, I want you to keep that double hump ridge to your skinny rear end at all times. That way, you might find your way back here by this time next week.
Oh, thank you kindly for your consideration. It's so nice to know somebody cares.
Oh, I don't give two shits about you. I'm just trying to keep you alive long enough so you'll pay me that $15 you borrowed from me 10 years ago over on the Platte.
It was more like $2, and it was on the Missouri, you ox. And I paid you back at the rendezvous last year. You were so drunk you don't remember.
Would you get the hell out of here before I throw you over the damn walls?
The mountain men grinned at each other, satisfied for the moment with their insults. Preacher checked his pistols and his hawking and dropped down from the ramparts, walking over to Lieutenant Maxwell Smith.
I'm going out yonder to eyeball the situation. I got me a hunch the Blackfoot's done pulled out, figuring their medicine is bad for this fight.
I thought the savages always returned for their dead.
You're right, they usually do. But in this case, they probably got so many dead and dying all around them, they just don't care no more. There ain't enough living to take care of the dead. We'll find out soon enough. I'll be back.
Preacher cracked the gate and squatted for a time, moving only his eyes, searching the hills and timber very carefully. The dead Blackfoot by the gate was all puffed up and smelled something horrendous. From the looks of him, he'd taken a full vat of boiling water and had it cooking proper. He died hard, but not as hard as lingering at death's door with the pops. Preacher dashed out and made the timber. There he squatted down and listened just as hard as he looked. He worked his way up a ridge, almost stepping on the body of a pilgrim the engines had dragged off and tortured. Preacher stepped over him and moved on to the crest of the ridge. He found another body there. It was an Eastern woman, and she'd been used hard before they cut her throat and scalped her bare. She'd been a blonde, and that was a much sought-after trophy for a war lance. Next, Preacher came upon a Blackfoot, badly wounded and dying. The brave was so weak he couldn't lift his war axe at Preacher's approach.
Oh, you son of a pig.
They left you here to die, did they? Now, there's no need to feel hard at me. I didn't shoot you. If I'd have shot you, you'd be dead.
Please, finish.
Yeah, all right.
Preacher bashed a Blackfoot on the head with the butt of his hawking. It was done with no malice. If Preacher had been found belly shot as bad as that brave, with his guts hanging out the hole in his back, he'd have wanted someone to do the same. Preacher stayed in the timber and brush, moving carefully and silently, and skirting a little meadow, he worked his way up another ridge. The sight before him brought him up short. Row after row of dead or dying engines lay in the shallow meadow. Preacher squatted down by a tree and eyeballed the gruesome sight. He'd never seen anything like it in all his years. There must have been 500 or more Blackfoot all laid out in rows, most of them dead. But Preacher knew the defenders of the fort hadn't killed near that many. Most of the dead and dying had just been too weak to go on. They'd used up everything they had during the night fighting and staggered back to this place to die. Probably the place had been all picked out beforehand. Damnedest thing he'd ever seen. Preacher returned to the fort and retrieved the lieutenant. Maxwell Smith took 10 men with him, leaving the senior sergeant commanding those troops back at the fort. Gray Bull and the 11 soldiers accompanied Preacher back to the little valley of death. They stood on the crest and looked down into the small valley.
Incredible.
We'd best start gathering up brush and pile it on the bodies. Gray Bull, you want to take a couple of the men and start some backfires so we don't set the whole damn forest blazing?
I'll do her.
Some of those savages are still alive out there.
Yeah, well, they won't be for long.
Preacher, I won't permit you to burn people alive.
I was planning on shooting the ones near death, Smith. Believe me when I tell you they'd want it that way.
I won't permit that either.
Have you ever seen Pox close up, Smith? The flesh rots. Go on down there and take a good look, why don't you?
There was anguish in the young officer's eyes. This was a decision that no man should be forced to make. But Lieutenant Jefferson Maxwell Smith was going to have to make it, one way or another.
All right. You do what you think is right. I'll leave Gray Bull here with you, and I'll go back to the fort and start burning the bodies back yonder. Oh, just remember this. You've been scratched, but that don't mean you can't catch you a small dose of the pox. So you work careful now, you hear?
I hear you, Preacher.
Preacher went back to the fort and organized volunteers to help drag off and burn the bodies of the dead. They tied rags around their mouths and pulled on gloves. Those that didn't have gloves wrapped rags around their hands in an attempt to avoid flesh contact with the dead. Preacher and the others worked swiftly to drag off the bodies and burn them, while others stood guard, attempting to frighten away or kill the many buzzards that angrily fought to tear and rip at the dead and bloated and infected flesh. Women kept huge vats of water boiling constantly, for every bit of clothing had to be boiled and sterilized. The smallpox virus could survive for months in the most unlikely of places, and knowing that, nothing could be left to chance. It was a grim-faced, haggard, and haunted Maxwell Smith, who along with his men dragged back into the fort just before dusk. Preacher watched him from his seat just outside the gate as he entered, not needing to ask what had been done back in the Valley of Death. He didn't have to. He'd heard the shots and seen the smoke through the day.
That boy growed up a whole lot this day.
Yeah, so did them pilgrims, Gray Bull. It's been tough on them burying them folks they come westward with. Hell, it's been hard on me burying the young children them stupid parents kept out of the fort. But I gotta tell you, I can't get the thought out of my head that there's a hell of a lot of grieving Injun mamas and daddies that's just as tough on.
It's gonna be a terrible thing when the whites really get to crowding in this country. It's got to the point now where a man can't hardly ride 4 or 5 days without seeing a white family. I tell you, Preacher, the ruination of the high country is fast coming on us.
Makes a man just want to sit down with a jug of good rye whiskey and get drunk, don't it?
That might not be a bad idea.
Well, there's a small problem there. There ain't no more whiskey to be had here at the fort.
What?
Yeah, it's true. Company doctor used it all, easing the pain of them that got wounded.
That's disgusting.
Disgusting, but true.
The next day, Preacher and Gray Bull went out to gather up the loose stock and drive them back to the fort, while the survivors set about trying to piece together wagons from the wreckage. Of the more than 50-odd wagons that had been gathered around the fort, the men managed to put together 20 wagons that looked like they might be able to stand the trek westward to Oregon Territory. Arriving back at the fort, Maxwell Smith summoned Preacher into his office.
Do take a seat, Preacher.
No, I don't want one. Ain't got no reason to tote one around anyhow.
Sit, sir! Tea?
Whiskey be better, but I reckon coffee'll do. I ain't never really developed no real taste for tea.
As you wish.
Thank you. What you got on your mind, Lieutenant?
You are aware, sir, that you are in British-held territory.
The land's in dispute. I reckon it'll be in American hands soon.
I don't count on that, sir. You colonists might have a fight on your hands.
Y'all tried that a couple of times, as I recall. It seems like you'd learn after a while.
Be that as it may, sir, I am in command here. Solely, I give the orders to both civilian and military personnel who are at this fort.
Well, then I'll be gone before you can blink.
Preacher, sit down, please. I need your help.
I ain't got no damn wagon train.
I can promise you more pay than any guide ever received before you.
I ain't got no use for riches. What am I gonna spend them on? Hell, man, I know where there's gold nuggets big as your toe. I got a sack full out there in my possibles bag. There's enough gold in that bag to last me the rest of my years. I ain't got no patience to guide no bunch of runny-nosed kids, whining women, foolish men. You got Grey Bull on the payroll. Give the job to him.
We have to keep him here. By the way, what is that man's Christian name?
I ain't got no idea. He got his name because he nearly drowned in the Grey Bull just west of the Bighorns.
I beg your pardon?
Yep, 20 years more ago. Around 15 or 16, I think it was. He got drunk and fell off his horse, and he's been called Grey Bull ever since. Nah, names ain't very important out here, Lieutenant. It's what's inside a man that counts.
Ah, by that you mean personal courage. The keeping of one's word when given. Never shirking duty. And, of course, helping those in need.
Oh, yeah, something like that.
I am in need, Preacher. Those poor pioneers out there are in need.
Now, just back up. I didn't tell them folks out yonder to head west. They done it all by themselves. Didn't nobody force them to do nothing. Them folks ain't my responsibility. And the truth be told, they ain't yours neither.
So you would just have me send them off westward into a largely unexplored land that is fraught with danger? A land that no man knows?
I know the damn country. Unexplored? Why, hell's fire! There's been trappers and traders and the like all over that damn country for years now! Why,
precisely, Preacher! You know the country they have to travel through. You're the best. You're a legend, Preacher. I marveled about your exploits in England. You...
All right, God damn it, that's enough grease. You slop any more lard on me, I'll be so slippery I won't be able to sit on a saddle. I'll guide your damn wagon train. God damn! Lord have mercy on a poor mountain boy like me.
Luke reported back to Bum. He had traveled hard over the previous day to get back to the gang. He hadn't entered the fort, only watched it from far off and talked to some Mandans he met on the trail.
It's the pox, Bum! The Blackfeet took the disease and then attacked the fort. They died by the hundreds, but not before they killed more than half of them movers and tore up a whole bunch of wagons. Them folks is busy piecing together wagons, so they're going to keep on their journey.
Did you see Preacher?
Yeah, and the missionaries. They made it through and is all right, appears to me. What's Red Hand say about this plan of yours?
He's thinking about it. Going back to his camp to talk it over with his bunch. You didn't bring nothing back with you, did you?
Yeah, oh no. I never did get close enough to catch nothing. And them Mandans I talked to had already been scratched for the pox.
Luke looked around, noticing that several new men had joined Bum and his troop while he was gone.
I know Burke and Dipper. I figured they'd hook up with us. Who's them others?
Jennings and Penn rode with the Hawkins gang up in the Northern Territories. They're good boys. Olsen and Wilson busted out of jail back in St. Louis in the winter. Olsen's a farm boy from back east. He's wanted for murder.
Who'd he kill?
His parents. I think he's a good man.
Sounds like it. Oh, hey, I got more news. There's another wagon train coming in later this month. The commanding officer at the fort sent some of his men to make sure it got in all right. There's some talk about the guide affixing to quit the train. What's left of the pilgrims at the fort is going to wait and hook up with this new train.
Who'll be guiding it?
Don't know. But Grey Bull's there. I seen him. Hard to miss a man his size.
Grey Bull's scouting for the army. I know that to be true. Trapping's about played out. Preacher. Has to be Preacher.
Doing what?
Guiding the damn train, idiot. Everything's working out just right. We'll get the gold, the women, and have Preacher to torture.
So we'll just stay right here and keep a low profile. By the time the trains link up and get ready to pull out, the boys will be healed up for the most part.
Sometimes you can make sense, Luke. Not often, but sometimes.
It was a long, hard, dangerous pull from Fort Hall to Fort Vancouver, with Indians being only part of the problem. There were rivers and streams to cross, and many of them would be running over their banks this time of the year. There would be broken bones and sprained limbs and squabbles among the movers. There would be wagon breakdowns. Wheels would come loose and have to be repaired. Tongues would break and harnesses would rip. Kids would get sick, and probably one or two would get lost in the woods. A couple of these silly females were pregnant, and that meant they'd probably birth along the trail. Preacher paced the lines of wagons and went over them again. The men and women and children watched him in silence, the kids big-eyed. He knew what he looked like to them, all dressed out in skins from his feet to his jacket. He looked like some grim-faced wild man with pistols and knives hanging all over him as he prowled up one side of the line and down the other, never speaking to anyone. He stopped when he came to Richard and Edmund's wagon. It was loaded with new supplies, but none of the quartet was anywhere around. One of the teenage boys from the train was sitting on the seat. He was 14 at most, with red hair, freckles, and a huge grin.
What are you doing up there, Tadpole?
Mr. Richard employed me to drive the wagon through the wilderness, sir.
Oh, did he now?
Yes, sir, he did. And the money will come in handy when we get through the wilderness and start the homesteading.
I reckon so. Your parents don't object to you doing this, do they?
Oh, no, sir, not one bit.
You figuring on handling that team of mules all day by yourself, do you?
I'm gonna try. We had mules back in Missouri. Big reds, just like the ones I'll be driving here. The ladies don't know how to drive a team, and Mr. Richard and Edmund said they would spell me from time to time.
Oh, well, that's right considerate of them. What are they gonna be doing?
Riding their mounts, sir. I believe they said something about assisting you.
They're planning on doing what?
Assisting you, sir.
Assisting me doing what?
Scouting, sir, I suppose.
Oh, sweet baby Jesus. Them two couldn't find their ass ends if their britches was on fire.
Preacher stalked off. Spying Melody heading his way, he ducked quickly between wagons. It was hard to believe that about 6 weeks back he was heading down to Rendezvous without a care in the world. Now he had a wagon train load of pilgrims with more coming in, a gang of outlaws on his trail, and a love-struck female who could raise the temperature of a room by 10 degrees just by walking into it. He'd even offered Gray Bull two of his gold nuggets to take the train westward, but the man thought too much like him. Not a chance in the world. Several weeks had passed since the pox had struck the Blackfoot, but the stench of death still hung faintly over the area. Preacher was getting anxious, ready to hit the trail and get through whatever danger and bother lay ahead. After his 100th check on those wagons already at Fort Hall, he was about checked out. He spent most of his days with his back to the outside of the stockade, chewing tobacco with Gray Bull.
The patrol that just come in says the second train's about 5 days out. 25 or 30 wagons. Them three wagons that rattled in last week, you'll have near about 60 wagons to guide through the wilderness.
The soldier boy say anything about the guide and the wagon master?
Only that they picked the guide up in St. Louis, and the wagon master's original from back east somewheres.
Wonderful. More pilgrims coming to the promised land.
This train started out in more than 40 wagons. They survived half a dozen major engagements with hostiles along the way. That tells me that they're at least somewhat trail-wise.
They got mules or oxen?
More oxen, mules. That means they won't be toting no heavy supply of grain.
Yeah, but they'll be slower. Now, on the other hand, engines don't steal oxen as a rule. Shit, I reckon it'll all balance out. Mainest thing is getting these pilgrims through with their hair. Hey, Lieutenant, you had any word on Red Hand?
No, nothing. And I was specifically warned about that renegade.
Yeah, that worries me.
You think Bum may have hooked up with him?
He's done it before. I'd like to see the end of both of them, and soon. Anyway, the best you can expect from ox is 12 to 15 miles a day. Mules can give you 18 to 20. We're looking at near about the end of summer before we reach Fort Vancouver. Is losing 10% of these people along the way off the mark, Bull?
I wouldn't think so. Probably more than that before it's all said and done. Say 20.
Lieutenant, I want the post surgeon to check these new people over good. My bunch is clean of cholera, and I want it to stay that way. Has the doc got enough laudanum to give us a goodly stock?
Yes. Since the train started coming this way, he's tripled his orders from the company.
What the hell's eating at you, Lieutenant?
What I just read in these papers.
And what would that be?
A financial panic has struck the people back east. Newspapers are calling it the Panic of 37. According to this newsletter, thousands of people are making plans to come westward.
Shit.
Well, there's more, and none of it good. Andrew Jackson has retired from office, and nearly all the major New York City banks have closed their doors. A massive financial depression has enveloped the land. Farmers can't sell their agricultural products, farm surpluses are clogging the markets, and farmers are being forced off the land because they have no money. A massive movement is on for the free lands of the Pacific.
Damn, Preacher. That's the end for us. Folks that ain't got no money sure can't buy pelts. You was right in what you said 2 years ago. You said the end was in sight and we'd all better brace for it. Them that laughed at you's eating mighty bitter words now.
Yeah, well, being right don't make me feel good, though. What else is read on them pages, Lieutenant? I know that ain't all. Your jaw is hanging low enough to touch your boots. Come on, let's have it.
Sickness. Back east, there are epidemics of typhoid, dysentery, tuberculosis, scarlet fever, and malaria. New Orleans is very nearly quarantined. Cholera is being brought over from Europe and is trekking westward with the human movement.
Oh, goddamn. Ain't they nothing good at all in them pages?
I'm afraid not, Preacher. I'm afraid not.
Preacher laid around the fort for the next several days, waiting for the second train to roll in. Once they did, he would carefully inspect the wagons and give the people a good eyeballing. It wouldn't be a problem if it slowed them down some. Them folks would be trail-worn and suffering bad from the wearies. They'd need some rest. Just a couple of days before the new group was set to roll in, Preacher was happy to see an old friend, Trapper Jim, step out of the woods and into Fort Hall. They had done some work together back in 27, but they hadn't seen each other since then. Jim told Preacher he'd come along for the ride. He was headed out west anyways. Since he got in, he sat around with Preacher chewing the fat, talking about the good old days, and taking stock of the softies they'd be hauling out to the Big Blue.
You know that hombre over there, Jim?
Can't say that I do. He drifted in last evening. Name's Luke.
Trapper?
No traps or pelts on his pack horse. I don't much cotton him. He's a tad shifty-eyed to suit me.
What's he riding?
Big Gray with a reworked brand. Of course, that don't mean nothing. As many folks that's been killed trying to come west, that horse could have belonged to anybody.
Yeah.
After Jim had wandered off for a bite, Preacher walked over to the store to eyeball the man called Luke. The mountain man stood on the rough-hewn log porch and just stared at the young man. Luke smiled at the Preacher. He didn't get one in return.
You want something?
Preacher didn't say word one. He studied the clothes the young man had on. He had a feeling he'd seen that jacket somewheres before. In fact, he knew he had. Then it came to him. At the ruins of the ambushed wagon train, he'd tried that very same jacket on himself and found it too tight across the shoulders. Of course, that didn't mean the fellow had done anything wrong. Preacher had taken clothes from there himself. Only a damn fool leaves usable clothing to rot in the weather if he's able to put it to use, as long as he didn't sell it or barter it. Luke's right hand drifted to the pistol tucked down behind his belt, a movement that did not escape the eyes of Preacher. Then something else returned to Preacher. Edmund had known the man who owned that coat. He'd found his body and put the coat on over the tortured flesh before they dragged off the bodies and caved the earth over them. And that can only mean one thing.
You goddamn grave robber.
What do you mean, Preacher?
How'd you know who I was?
I asked and somebody told me.
Who?
I just remember exactly.
You're a damn liar.
Lieutenant Maxwell Smith and Melody came strolling by at about that time.
Here now! What's going on here?
Look close, Melody. You recognize the jacket this grave-robbing son of a bitch is wearing?
Why, that's the suit coat we buried poor Mr. McNally in. Edmund put it on the poor man himself.
That's right.
Luke grabbed for his pistol. Preacher kicked the young man on the knee, knocking him off balance. Preacher stepped forward and busted Luke on the side of the jaw. Preacher jerked the pistol out of the man's britches and looked at it. The name Blaylock was carved in the butt, along with the inscription, Boston, Massachusetts, 1832. Graybull came at a running lumber and jerked the very badly frightened Luke to his feet, holding him by his neck with a huge hand.
Where'd you steal this boy?
I ain't stole nothing. Preacher, it's mine. My pa gave it to me.
What's your pa's name?
Wilbur Mason.
From where?
Maryland.
Do you even know what's carved here, boy?
Yeah, my pa's name.
Where was your pa back in 32?
In the ground, dead. Fever got him and my sister, too.
Then how come this pistol's got the name Blaylock carved on it, along with Boston, Massachusetts, 1832?
But, Preacher, I thought you told me you couldn't read words.
Yeah, well, I lie on occasion. And, size, I didn't say I couldn't read. I said it'd been a long time since I had, that's all.
What else have you lied about?
What? This ain't the time to go into that. So, Loopy boy, you ride with Bum and his trash, don't you? You coming here to spy for him, ain't that right?
I don't know no one named Bum Kelly.
Then how'd you know his last name?
Luke was tossed into the post stockade. Turned out his whole name was Luke Chatfield, and he was wanted for murder in Ohio. He'd be taken, sooner or later, to the Northern Territories for trial. Now, Bum was a gutsy outlaw, but everyone suspected he was smart enough not to attack a fort under the protection of the crown, not for someone as blatantly worthless as Luke Chatfield. Luke gave up protesting his innocence and offered to make a deal in return for his neck. Smith agreed after consulting with Preacher. Luke revealed that so far, Bum had about 20 men, and he was still looking for more. Chances were, he'd linked up with Red Hand and his 40 Braves to ambush the wagon train somewhere between there and Vancouver. A few sentences out of Luke was just about all Preacher and Maxwell Smith could stomach before having to get out of the dirty son of a bitch's presence.
60-something men, Preacher? That's quite a raiding party.
Way more than enough to give us hell out yonder on the trail. Red Hand's people are gonna harass us at night, stealing and killing stock and crippling the wagons. They'll try to drag us down slow and then move in for the kill.
And your plan is?
My plan is I'm taking the wagon train through to Oregon Territory. To hell with Bum Kelly and Red Hand.
I really wish I could let you have some men, Preacher, but I don't have the authority to do so.
I'll get them through. I'll lose some to accidents. Some will probably fall to diseases, and Bum and Red Hand will get some more. But most of them's gonna get through, or else I'll be buried along the trail with them.
The second wagon train finally rolled up to the walls of the fort. The Preacher stood and watched as more kids than he'd ever seen in many a year poured out of the wagons. It seemed like they'd never stop coming. All of them running around like a bunch of idiots.
Good God, I sure hope some of them is midgets, Bull.
You gonna have your hands full babysitting that bunch. Look, I got to go scouting, old son. We'll say our hail and farewells now, I reckon.
You be careful out there, you moose. And stay with your hair, you hear?
You ride easy in the saddle, Preacher. And try not to get hitched up with that honey-haired filly.
The men grinned at each other, and Grey Bull was gone, walking to his horse to begin his lonely and dangerous job. Yeah! Preacher stood forward and watched Grey Bull until he was swallowed up by the wilderness. He wondered if he would ever see the man again. He shook the thought from his head and set about locating and acquainting himself with the guide and wagon master of the train. Maxwell Smith stopped him before he had gone more than 15 paces towards the group.
There appears to be a small problem, Preacher.
Well, hell's fire, when ain't there been? What's wrong now?
The guide just quit. Said he was going back to St. Louis.
Well, good. I don't need no second opinion in getting this train across the wilderness. about the wagon master.
Well, he seems to be a good, solid man. He's staying on.
Now let's go meet him.
The wagon master was named Swift, and Preacher immediately sized him up as a man who would brook no nonsense from anyone. He was a well-built man of middle age with quick, intelligent eyes. Preacher could tell that he was being sized up at the same time by the wagon master.
You been over the trail?
More than once.
How bad is it from this point on?
You ever been to hell?
Can't say that I have.
Well, you're about to get a goodly taste of it. Y'all got any sickness with you?
No, just some blisters and sore muscles. My bunch are all in good shape. I insisted that everyone get scratched before we left.
Good to see you know your business.
We got sheep, goats, milk cows, and extra mules and oxen. We hooked up with a small train 3 days ago. We are 31 wagons and more than 120 people.
Yeah, most of them kids.
Correct, sir. But I found them to be well-behaved, and they've become trail-wise. You'll find none of them dashing off to get lost in the woods. One did, back in Wyoming. We never found him. That settled the rest of them down.
It usually takes something like that to do it, so I've been told. Sorry you had to lose a kid. Look, I gotta be honest with you, Swift. I've been a mountain man for all my life, since I was 12 years old. I come out to this land 15 years after Mackenzie. I wasn't the first, but them that was first, they left, and I stayed. I know the trail. I've been over it and back. But I ain't never guided no wagon train filled with females and squalling kids, and I ain't got no patience with youngins. So I'm gonna stay shut of the train as much as possible. All you need to know is one thing. Don't cross me when I tell you to do something. If I tell you to gather the wagons, you give that order right then and there. If I tell you we're stopping early in the day, I got a reason for it. And I'm warning you right now that we got a bad bunch of outlaws on our trail. And they've hooked up with some renegade Injuns who's headed by a Blackfoot called Red Hand. Now, that's about it, I reckon. You folks have put some hard miles behind you, but you got some hard ones ahead. Get busy checking out your wagons and the like, and we'll start whenever your people have rested and resupplied.
My people will be ready to go in 2 days.
Well, that's when we'll roll out then.
On the morning of the pullout, Preacher was out of his blankets while the stars were still bright overhead. He saddled Hammer and rigged up his light-loaded pack horse and tied the reins to the back of a wagon. Preacher had fixed the cart up and put Trapper Jim in charge of driving it through. He'd filled it with gewgaws to trade with the Injuns they would encounter along the way. It was stocked with bolts of calico, Hudson's Bay blankets, a batch of metal knives, and a trunk filled with 3-pound carrots of tobacco. He'd also added several dozen 1-pound metal kettles and lots of cheap but flashy trinkets. Richard and Edmund had made their appearance in their new trail gear the day before. Preacher had been wondering about those two, so he was not surprised when they showed up all in buckskin. They'd arranged for one of the Flathead women who'd returned to the fort to make the skins. Damnedest looking sight Preacher believed he'd ever seen in all his days. Melody and Penelope had come up with side saddles, only God knew where, and they had announced that they would be mounted at least part of the way. Melody found Preacher as he was squatting down, drinking coffee, and chewing on a biscuit filled with salted fatback. It was still dark, and the morning was pleasant. Preacher looked up at her. Both women had been doing a lot of sewing, and each had put together several fashionable riding outfits. Melody sat down beside him.
I'm so excited I could just fairly burst.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Yeehaw!
Preacher squinted into the darkness to spot a very large, muscular, and smart-aleck teenage boy of about 15 or 16. He'd seen him for the first time the day before, and he had taken an immediate disliking to the kid.
That idiot. If he does that on the trail, somebody's gonna shoot him, and it might be me.
Avery is just full of himself, that's all. He's been flirting with all the girls. Why, he even made eyes at Penelope.
Better watch him around the sheep.
Beg pardon?
I said, did you get enough sleep?
Oh, yes. So, how far is it, Preacher?
In miles? I ain't got no idea. We'll be weeks on the trail. We'll do good to average 10 or 12 miles a day over much of this country. There'll be days we'll push 15, days we'll do 4 or 5. Some days we'll never leave camp because of the weather.
You always look on the gloomy side of things, Preacher.
I look at the way things is, Melody. Not the way I want them to be. Well, get your kit together. We'll be puffing out at first light.
Preacher? Why do you dislike me?
Oh, I don't dislike you, Melody. Matter of fact, I like you more than I have any woman before in my life, and maybe that's the problem. See, this is my world, Melody. The mountains and the valleys and the plains and the wild things. But yours is all different. I don't fit in your world, and you don't fit in mine. So there ain't no point in starting nothing that neither of us can finish. It's not that it won't change, it's that I can't. I'm as much a part of this land as the mountains I live in and the wind that blows through the passes. This is where I'll die. You folks back east, you read all about the carryings on of Kit Carson. Melody, I was out here years before that squirt showed up. I was the first white man to see much of this country. It was me that opened up many of the trails that folks are now using. I wasn't alone in doing it, but I was there. And I can't leave this country for no length of time. It just keeps pulling me back. It calls to me, Melody. It sings to me. It's a part of me, and I'm a part of it. I can go for weeks without hearing the sound of a human voice. And I love it. I love it. I don't need people the way you do. Hell, I don't even like most people. They want everything that I don't see no need for and ain't got no use for. I got my good horses, fine saddle, my guns, and a good knife. What else do I need? Nothing. Not a thing. You want a roof over your head. I can't hardly sleep under no damn roof. Not for no length of time. Hems me in. Makes me nervous when I can't look up at the stars. You're a fine woman, Melody. I believe that. And you are a looker, too. Hell, you're about as easy on the eyes as any female I ever seen. But I ain't the man for you. Now, I do got to say that I'm prideful you like me. Any man who wouldn't be is a pure damn fool. But let's us just be friends. No more than that. Because it can't be, Melody. You and me, it just can't be.
Preacher was in the saddle, restlessly leading the hammer up one side and down the other of the wagon train. Faint streaks of gray were slowly highlighting the eastern horizon. He stopped by the Jigal wagon. Trapper Jim sat on the seat, the reins in his big, work-hardened hands. The man had the twinkle of excitement in his eyes.
Are you filled with excitement and wonderment at the journey ahead?
Where in the hell did you hear that?
One of the movers said it about 15 minutes ago. I'd like to have fell off in this seat.
What I'm filled with is coffee and biscuits and fatback. You ate yet?
Yeah, right good meal. One of the movers held me and fed me. Nice folks. Preacher, I had me a running with that boy called Avery last evening. He's gonna cause us some woe, I'm feared.
Yeah, I got the same thoughts. What'd he do?
Sassed me right smart. I was of a mind to box his ears, but if I'd done that, I'd probably have to kill his paw. He was watching close. Shooting that man wouldn't have been no way to start off a trip.
Would have spoiled his evening for sure. Yeah, that boy's gonna be trouble. I gleaned that right off. Swift thinks so, too. He told me he's close to banishing the wagon from the train, but he just couldn't do it in the middle of hostile country.
Well, you might have to. Preacher, some of the other movers wanted to call the meeting here at the fort and discharge the family. Some others talked them out of it.
I guess we'll cross that river when it comes time. We'll be shoving off in a few. I'll talk to you later.
I'll be creeping along, all filled with wonderment and excitement.
All right, folks, get the kids that's riding into the wagons. Place that rope on your grease bucket, Sanders. You're gonna lose it before the day's gone. Secure your canvas back here, Smithers. Good gust of wind, she'll rip and sail clear to the blue waters. All know that those not yet ready to take their place in the line of march must fall to the dusty rear for the day. So get in place, and y'all count out your young'uns. Drovers, to the livestock in the rear.
Edmund and Richard rode up, all splendid in their new buckskins and wide-brimmed hats. Preacher noticed that Bible thumpers though they may be, they were both armed with a brace of pistols and rifles in the boot. As dawn split the skies, Edmund took off his hat and waved it over his head.
Onward to our western destiny! Yee-haw!
Edmund landed hard, his butt connecting with the rocky ground.
Lord, give me strength.
Preacher was up early on the morning of the sixth day out, earlier than usual. He wasn't sure why, but many of his hunches had kept him alive in the wilderness, and he never questioned them. They were camped on the south side of the Snake River. Across the river to the north lay the Snake River Plain, lava beds, and totally inhospitable terrain. The first several days had passed uneventfully with near-perfect weather. The wagon train had settled into a routine, covering about 35 miles at a steady pace. Preacher could ask for no better than that. They had come a ways, but he wasn't worried yet about Bum and Red Hand attacking this close to the fort. They would wait until the train was a good 100 miles out before making their move. One way or another, Preacher knew they were about. He'd been picking up their signs since day two and suspected that Bum and Red Hand had gone on ahead to pick out their ambush site, leaving scouts behind to watch the train for weak points. Only time would tell when they would start harassing the train. Preacher moved past the sleepers, most of whom slept under their wagons. The beds of all the wagons were filled with precious possessions the movers had carefully packed, from wood-burning stoves to coffee grinders to violins. They took whatever they could. Supplies were scarce and expensive on the coast. Preacher stopped and gazed out at the blackness of night. Storm clouds had moved in during the night, and the stars and moon were unseen this early morning. There was something out there in the darkness, something that triggered the mountain man's survival instincts. Preacher wasn't sure, but he had him an idea that someone was about to make a move, maybe slipping in to cut a throat or grab a child. Preacher's eyes focused on a very slight movement in the gloom. He stood motionless just beside one of the nearly 6-foot-high rear wheels of a wagon. The object the Preacher had spotted moved ever so slightly. He smiled in the dark as he slid out his long-bladed knife from its sheath. Preacher held the big-bladed knife close to his leg, preventing any glimmer of light from reflecting off the polished metal. The heavy blade was edge up, allowing for a gut cut. The man Preacher watched move closer to the encircled wagons, moving expertly on moccasined feet. Preacher caught the glint of faint light off a blade. He also caught a whiff of grease and smoke on the half-naked flesh of the renegade engine just as he took his last step. He grabbed the brave by the hair, lowering him carefully to the dewy ground. Even though an entire family of husband and wife and two kids were sleeping under the wagon not 5 feet from the death scene, no one even stirred. Preacher squatted down and contemplated scalping the renegade, but instantly decided against it. No reason to have any more of the movers thinking him a terrible savage than already did. He wiped his blade clean on the Indian's leggings, then left the body where it was and moved off toward the center of the encirclement for some coffee. He smiled, figuring it was going to be right interesting in a few minutes, just as soon as Swift tooted the wake-up call on his bugle. Preacher headed toward the fire, moving in silently behind the man perched beside it. The feller was in charge of keeping the flames going throughout the night.
Howdy.
Oh! Lord God, you took 10 years off my life.
Oh, mister, you wouldn't have had 10 seconds left if I'd been a hostile. I'm guessing it's near about 4 o'clock. You got a watch?
5 minutes to four. My woman made some pan bread last evening. It's over there. There's already some jam to spread on it.
That's kind of you. Where y'all from?
Ohio. Lost my farm when the Depression struck. Couldn't sell my pigs, so I went bust. Had to do something, and this seemed like the thing to do.
Going to the promised land, huh?
Beats watching my woman and kids starve.
I reckon. What's your name, Pilgrim?
Prather.
Well, Prather, let me give you some advice about guard work. Don't stand in one spot for very long. Move around. And when you are stationary, stay in the shadows. And move your eyes around, not your whole body. And looky here, we got people after us that can come into a camp like this, cut a throat, and just be gone. Won't nobody knows they's done it till the body's found.
I do not believe that, sir.
Oh, is that right? I reckon in about 2 minutes you're gonna have to be eating them words, but we'll see.
I see nothing amusing.
Eh, well, neither will them folks sleeping warm in their blankets under that wagon yonder, I expect, but it might just teach them a hard lesson.
You're a strange man, Preacher.
I've been called worse. Yeah, should be starting about now.
Holy Christ!
Called it about right, didn't I, Prather?
There's the body of a savage over here, and his throat's been cut!
Don't you never call me no liar again, Prather. I don't like it. I cut that Injun's throat before he could cut yours or grab some child or jerk the hair off a woman. You got a lot to learn about this country, Pilgrim. You folks think you're going to a city that's got boardwalks and street lamps and the like? Ho-ho, you are all in for a hell of a surprise, you are.
Preacher rose and walked over to the wagon, stepping over the tongue and pointing to the dead Injun.
Red Hand's got a dozen different tribes in his bunch, all of them bad poison. This one's a rogue Kiowa. See that raggedy sash hanging over his shoulder? That means at one time he was a principal dog. One of the 10 bravest men in the tribe. At least that's what he wanted Red Hand to think he was. If he was a dog, he must have done something terrible to get kicked out of the whole damn tribe.
How could he get this close without one of the sentries seeing him?
Good God, you traveled 1,200 or so miles and still don't understand, do you? Good Lord alone knows how you folks made it this far.
Preacher started walking away.
Well, here now, sir. What about this dead savage?
You want to bury him, hop to it. Was it up to me, I'd just roll him about 50 feet away from the wagon and leave him lay. Some of his own will come to fetch him. And if they don't, the buzzards or varmints will take care of him.
That's disgusting.
Out here, that's called practical.
Red Hand looked into the distance and was silent for a moment. The renegade Injun was no friend to Preacher. Their paths had crossed on more than one occasion, with Red Hand coming out the loser every time. He knew from bitter experience that the mountain man was a savage fighter and could be totally ruthless towards his enemies. He shook his head and turned away from the dawning sun to face the outlaw bum Kelly.
He ain't coming back. Preacher got him. Bet on it.
He was a dog warrior, one of the best in my band. I sent him to test Preacher, to see if he had lost any of his skills. He has not. Now you must send one of your men to kill Preacher on the trail while he scouts.
Bum knew he was being tested by the renegade, whose own people had banished him from the tribe. If he didn't send someone after Preacher, Red Hand and his men would simply leave. This couldn't happen. Bum needed the force of Red Hand's group if any attack against the train was to succeed. He suspected Luke had sold them all out back at the fort. Not that that fool had much to tell anybody. The outlaw had picked up two more men who were running from the law in California, Waller and a man named Seedy.
You're right. That's what I'll do for a fact.
When?
Today.
Good. Good. Then when your man does not return, we shall be even, won't we?
That's right, Red Hand. We'll be even.
Bum walked to the fire and poured coffee from a battered and blackened pot. He looked at his men, one at a time. Finally, he settled on one.
Rod, pack you a kit for several days and go kill Preacher. Take him out on the trail, away from the train. If you don't kill him, don't bother coming back here. You understand that?
You got it, Bum.
The outlaw stood up and walked to his horse, saddling up. He knew perfectly well that if he didn't kill the mountain man, he wouldn't be alive to even think about returning. Men like Preacher, he only got one chance.
He won't be back. Who knows, Slug? Maybe he'll get lucky and kill that goddamn Preacher.
You're dreaming if you believe that, Beckman. Rod was sent because that damn engine didn't come back, that's all. You know how engines think.
You reckon Red Hand will go back yonder and bury that buck, bum?
Hell no. These bunch don't pay much attention to their tribe's customs. Besides, we don't know for sure that he's dead.
He's dead, and we know it. He went on a fool's mission with Preacher prowling around the train. And don't sell Trapper Jim short, neither. He can be as mean as a cornered puma.
Shut up, Slug. Preacher's just a man. Just one man, and that's all.
Preacher had been positioned towards the rear of the steadily paced wagon train, but as they approached the river, he sped up to move to the head. As rivers go, the one up ahead wasn't supposed to be much, but there had been a lot of rain that spring, and the winter had been terribly harsh. The snow melt left most of the rivers in the area running over their banks. Catching the side of the mounted Swift, Preacher guided Hammer up to his side. Just as he reached him, Richard and Edmund rode up as well, slowing the Preacher and the wagon master's pace.
Hold the wagons here, Swift, so the animals won't smell the water and act up with it so near. I'll ford this river and check it out. You can rest your folks some while I'm gone.
Wagons! Halt!
Is this the best place you know to cross, Preacher?
Yep. Banks is too steep for miles up or down, and I've been up and down for miles. Come on and have a look-see. Then you can decide whether you want to build rafts or try and rope and float them across.
May Edmund and I accompany you, men.
Suits me. Let's go. There are a lot of rocks in there?
Nope. Like I said, Injun's been using this spot to cross for hundreds of years. And whether you believe it or not, they're some of the best engineers in the world.
What do you mean?
Most of the roads in the United States started as Injun trails before the white man came along and widened them for wagons. The white man makes the mistake of thinking that Injuns is dumb, but they is far from being dumb. They just don't think like we do. Here, give me your ropes, boys.
Preacher tied himself to the other three men, using knots Richard nor Edmund had ever seen before. Many trappers had worked on keel boats, and Preacher was no exception. Preacher tied one end of the connected ropes to a sturdy tree right to his side, then turned Hammer toward the water.
See you directly.
The mountain man lifted his rifle high above his head. He needed to keep the powder dry in at least one of his weapons.
You got it, Hammer. Come on.
Hammer scrambled up the bank on the other side, and Preacher jumped off. He secured the other end of the rope to a large tree.
Get your people to building them rafts, Swift. Then have them start emptying the wagons, because we got to make them lighter. We'll build rafts and float their possessions across.
You got it, Preacher.
Swift waved his hand and turned his horse. Preacher picketed Hammer and began laying out his weapons to dry. This was no time for wet powder, not with Bum and Red Hand liable to pop up at any minute. Preacher knew Red Hand and how the renegade thought. The man had lost one of his people, so that meant that he would expect Bum to send one of his men in. That's engine logic. No way that any of those hooligans and ne'er-do-wells in Bum's gang would have the courage to try Preacher alone and face-to-face, so he would have to be doubly cautious at all times, because an ambush or a sneak shot in the back was what was coming. Rising to his feet, he turned his attention to Richard and Edmund. The two men were standing across the river, staring over at Preacher for orders.
First raft over, send my kit with it. I ain't crossing again.
Will do, Preacher.
Richard turned his horse sharply on the slick bank, but the animal started to slip as it struggled to keep its foot. It failed and began sliding slowly down into the river as Richard frantically waved one arm, the other hand gripping the saddle horn.
Well, Rich, if you're that anxious to join me, come on across there! Goddamn pilgrims.
While Richard retired to the bushes to strip down and dry off, Preacher worked at constructing a lean-to for that night's shelter beside the fire. Swift stayed on the other side, getting the river crossing operation ready. It was not a complicated move getting wagons across swollen bodies of water, but it was dangerous. Richard stepped out of the woods behind Preacher, clad in his buckskins.
Does this river have a name?
Yep, called the Raft. Just down the trail a few miles is what's called the California Trail. Some take that route, but she's a dangerous one. Swift done right in sticking with this trail.
You suppose the river was named the Raft because someone once had to build a raft to cross it?
I can't rightly say, Richard, but that's as good a reason as any, I reckon.
You say the route we're taking is the correct one, Preacher, but several back at the fort urged us to change our plans and take the California Trail. Why is that?
Now, sure they did, but it wasn't done with no charity behind the words. The Hudson's Bay people is trying to keep as many settlers out as they can.
Why?
Fur. They don't want to see pilgrims coming in and settling up the fur country. When they done told y'all this route was a bitch kitty, they wasn't lying about it, old hoss, but it ain't nearabouts as bad as the California Trail. If we was to take the Southwest Trail, it'd lead the body through rocks, sagebrush, greasewood, and smack into that god-awful Great Basin. And that's over 500 miles of hell. Dry, salt, and baked clay. Mountains all around it that act like a damn white-hot mirror. Then you reach the Humboldt, and it don't flow, it oozes. Eat dust instead of drinking water. Then if you was to make it cross that, and that's doubtful, you got the Sierra Nevadas to cross. And them mountains is tough, boy. They are mighty tough.
And the way we're going?
Oh, it's bad, hoss. Engines, rivers, storms. A lot of the time, you people's gonna spend with an axe in your hand clearing a way through for the wagons. There ain't no roads. Y'all got to cut your way through. But before then, now, before we turn to cross the Blue Mountains, you're gonna see some of the wildest country you ever gazed upon. South rim of the Snake, that's about 300 miles rough. Then you cross the Blues. After that, you got about 250 miles to raft down the Columbia and ride out some damn wild rapids, or about 250 miles if you can attempt a wagon through the Cascades. Only then will you see the Willamette Valley. But there's gonna be some in this train who won't see it. Believe that, Richard.
So we still have weeks ahead of us.
If we're lucky. If we have trouble and get caught in them Cascades in the fall, we're gonna be real unlucky. You get caught up there when the snow comes, you're liable to end up eating each other. It'll happen sooner or later, too. You can bet some damn fool's gonna get trapped up there at some point.
I would never resort to cannibalism.
You ain't never been hungry before, Richard. I've come up on folks trying to make it crossed in the winter that was pawing through the snow like an animal, eating grass and roots and bark off a tree.
Those people you found, did they live?
None of the first bunch I found did. Two of the second bunch made it, though. The others were too far gone for me to help. All the damn fools brought their kids with them, too. Terrible sight to behold, let me tell you that.
They were trying to improve their lives by moving west, Preacher.
Yeah, well, they didn't. And I don't like burying kids. It just ain't right. It's crazy for folks to set out in the middle of the summer heading for the blue water. But you just can't tell some folks nothing.
Preacher and Richard spun at the same time to peer across the river. Melody stood jumping up and down and pointing. Preacher reached down to grab his Hawken and jumped for the bushes.
Melody! What's wrong?
Indians!
Where?
Behind you!
Richard's heart sunk. He spun around, coming face to face with three of the most disreputable-looking men he'd ever seen in all his life. Each was mounted high on a pony.
We ain't no damn Indians. Well, Nighthawk over here is. The Prees are Frenchy, and I'm called Beartooth. I'm a pure D frontiersman.
Shit, I bet you can't even spell that word.
Hell no, he can't spell it. He just learned to pronounce it a week ago.
Preacher stepped from the bushes, standing face to face with the three men. Dupree jumped off his pony and ran over to Preacher, grabbing him in a bear hug. The two men jumped around for a few seconds, each pounding on the other's back. One of the mounted men looked on disapprovingly.
I beg your pardon?
Old Nighthawk here doesn't say much, but he'll come when you call him to eat. How you been, Preacher?
Tolerably well, thank you. You're looking prosperous.
Looks don't always tell the story. Fur's about played out, Preacher.
We didn't make enough to write home about. If I had a home to write to, that is.
When did you learn to write? I've been reading what newspapers we could find out loud to you for years.
Yeah, but you read them in French, you idiot. I don't know what the hell's going on. I think you did it deliberate. So, Preacher, you guiding wagon trains now?
Just this one. Sort of got roped into it, you might say, after the fight at Fort Hall.
What fight?
Y'all heard about the epidemic?
No, we've been cleared to the Cascades this winter. Sold our pelts over to Fort Vancouver and then headed east.
Yeah, well, the pox wiped out the Blackfoot nearabouts. Anyway, we'll palaver later. We gotta start getting these wagons of pilgrims across this stream here. Now, if you's a mind to, you could help.
What's in it for us if we do help out?
Food, cooked by a woman's hand.
Food? We eat first, talk later.
See? What'd I say about old Nighthawk?
While they waited for the first wagon, aided by rafts and ropes to begin the crossing, Beartooth stepped over closer to Preacher.
You watch when you get up to the Blues. Them damn cayuses is on the prod for some reason. We had us a good fight a couple of weeks ago. Seems like of late even the Injuns we've been friendly with for years has turned meaner than a grizzly. Them cayuses is all riled up about that new mission that was built last year, I think it was.
Yeah, I heard about it. It's really there on the Oregon Trail?
Just north of it. Right where the Walla Walla forks. A man by the name of Whitman built him a church there, and he's preaching the gospel to the savages. But them cayuses ain't taking to it real well.
Wagon, come in!
What the hell does he expect us to do? Swim out there and pull it in? How do you put up with these pilgrim preachers? They don't appear to know nothing.
Well, you know I'm a patient man, boys. Come upon Edmund over there and some of the other poor lost children. And the Lord told me to help him, in a roundabout way. And you all know that I have the disposition of a saint and have never turned my back on a child of God in need of help.
What you is a liar. You the most cantankerous, ornery, sullied up, and mean-spirited man I ever met.
Ooh, I bet you got a skirt on that train. That's what I think.
Oh, shit. The broken main rope sank under the water as the wagon began spinning round and round in the middle of the swirling river. Four mountain men jumped into the water. The creature dunked under the surface and managed to grab the severed limb.
Got it! Whoa! Shit! Give me a hand, fella!
We're with you! The tree, grab the very end! Toss it ashore when we give you some slack!
As the other three men latched on, they strained with all their might to hold the raft.
Heads up on shore!
Dupree tossed the now loose end of the rope while the other three mountain men struggled to stabilize the raft in the middle of the rope. Richard, who showed more savvy on the trail every day, grabbed the loose end that Dupree tossed him and quickly secured it to a tree. Preacher, Dupree, and Beartooth muscled the raft around and got the other end secured.
All right over there! Pull it ashore!
Hang on!
At least we get a free ride to shore!
After dragging the wagon safely to shore, the mountain men and Richard gathered around to examine the rope that had come loose.
Yes, these ropes been cut.
Yeah, someone cut halfway through and the strain done the rest. But who?
Preacher lifted his eyes and looked out across the river. That young troublemaker Avery stood on the other side, smirking at him. Up to now, all the kid had done, and that was plenty, was nonsense stuff. Just pranks, the mean pranks. He hadn't actually hurt anybody. But this was different. This could have resulted in a family losing everything they owned, and maybe even their lives. Preacher saw Swift emerge from the woods, coming to a stop a short distance away from Avery.
Everything all right over there, Preacher?
Oh, yeah.
You got another wagon come across?
Richard, you cross over. I need you and Edmund to keep an eye on that Avery boy. He's gonna get somebody bad, hurt, or dead if this keeps up.
You don't know that he did it, Preacher. Although I certainly wouldn't put it past him.
Let's just say he's a likely candidate. Go on. Let's get some wagons across this stream. And tell Swift to send a team over next. We can't muscle these damn wagons up this slope by ourselves.
The men worked all the rest of that day and managed to get 10 wagons, teams, and personal possessions across the river. As nightfall approached, Preacher called work to a halt, and the mountain men sank wearily to the ground. A woman came over to him, placing a heaping plate of meat and potatoes and dried apple pie in front of each. She came to Beartooth last. He grinned up at her.
Mayhaps could we hire on this here train? This grub ain't bad, and to tell you the truth, we could use the money.
I don't know that they could pay much. These folks are all pretty near broke. What money they got, they have to dole it out careful. They gotta have a poke to get by in the promised land till they get a crop in.
Oh, hell, Preacher. You know we ain't gonna ride off and leave you in this mess alone. We'll just tag along for the victuals.
Hell, the way Nighthawk eats, he'll be lucky to keep y'all here through breakfast.